Deuteronomy chapter 19. We're going to finish, Lord willing, this chapter today. We're looking at justice in the land as Moses dealt with various topics regarding how to handle government when they get in the promised land, which wouldn't be long. Remember, Deuteronomy only covers about 30 days. And then, of course, Joshua takes the people over. Moses goes to be with the Lord. Justice in the land. We look first at the cities, which, of course, were the cities of refuge. We talked about the manslayer, those that would accidentally kill somebody. And we talked about an application regarding the cities of refuge. We won't go back over that. Then we saw last time as well the murderer, how they were to be dealt with, the one that was guilty of first-degree murder. And this morning we're going to look at the thief. The thief, if somebody would be so kind as to read just one verse, verse number 14, chapter 19, verse 14. All right, George, can you handle one verse this morning?
I think I can do it.
All right, go ahead.
Thou shalt not remove thy neighbor's landmark, which they of old time have set in thine inheritance, which thou shalt inherit in the land that the Lord thy God giveth thee to possess it.
All right, I remember... back probably in about 1982 or 83, Barbara and I went to Mark Groom's church. He had church there not too far from where we were living. And I think, Kathy, you told me you're still there, right? Outside, just a little bit outside of Lynchburg, Virginia. But I don't normally remember sermons. I'm sure you don't. Or maybe you do. Maybe I'm just on you. But I remember that Mark preached a message on don't remove the ancient landmark. And he made application to how far at that time, now that we're talking early 80s, how far at that time we had moved away from biblical standards and how things were getting watered down and we were becoming more like the world. And he preached out of, and we'll look at this verse, in the book of Proverbs, there's a passage that says, remove not the ancient landmark. But here Moses is dealing with stealing. And it's interesting that he talks about, uses an example of removing a landmark. Because what would happen, or what would happen, because they're not there yet, but when they got their inheritance, when they got their land, and individuals had their property, they would mark the boundaries with stones, large stones, and they would put their name on it. Well, what thieves would do, and those that were dishonest, they might walk up to the stone and get a couple of them together, and they'd move it to make their land larger. And, of course, I mean, that was evil. And so Moses said, you know what? When you get over in the land, you're going to be tempted to move somebody's stone. Don't do it. Don't do it. Joshua, Eleazar, the high priest, and the heads of the 12 tribes would cast lots and make the assignments. And we're going to go through Joshua when we get done here, but let me just go ahead and read this one verse out of Joshua chapter 14. Two verses, verses 1 and 2. And these are the countries which the children of Israel inherited in the land of Canaan, which Eleazar the priest and Joshua the son of Nun, very lonely man, he had no parents at all. That's old, isn't it? The son of Nun. Yeah. That's as bad as Rebecca smoked cigarettes. She lit off her camel. Yeah, that's not... Or that God is a baseball fan in the big inning. Those are all old, aren't they? Yeah. Okay. And the heads of the fathers of the tribes of the children of Israel distributed for inheritance to them. By lot was their inheritance, as the Lord commanded by the hand of Moses for the nine tribes and for the half tribe. So that's how they would do it when they get into the land. And then within the tribes, each family and clan would make its own claim and mark it out with boundary stones. And everyone was to honor where these stones were placed. So to move the ancient landmarks was equal to stealing land. Crooked officials would exploit the poor and the widows and take away their land and their income. And as I mentioned in Proverbs, there's actually a couple of scripture that I want to look at here very quickly. Proverbs 15, 25. Proverbs 15 and verse 25. The Lord will destroy the house of the proud, but he will establish the border or the boundary of the widow. The Lord will tear down someone of poor character, and in this case, someone that would be willing to cheat even a widow. And then chapter 23, verses 10 and 11, remove not the old landmark, and enter not into the fields of the fatherless or the orphans. For their Redeemer is mighty. He shall plead their cause with thee. Or he is the defender of the widow and the orphan. And I think 22. Chapter 22. Let's see. I got a little note. 28. Remove not the ancient landmark which thy fathers have set. Okay, so it's very clear that they were not to move the stones. God owned the land. He was the owner of the land. I mean, who owns everything we have? God does. Because when we're gone, it's still here, right? God is the one that has given us what we enjoy. We might have worked hard, and God honors hard work. But ultimately, every good and perfect gift comes from where? From above, yeah, from the Father of lights. Okay, so in this case, of course, God actually gave them the land. He took it from other peoples that were dishonoring him and were steeped in idolatry and wickedness, and he replaced them with his own chosen people. They weren't chosen because they were great. They were chosen because God chose them. It's that simple. Same reason why God chose us. None of us are special, not in regard to other humans. We're all sinners. We're all born with a sin nature. We all are lost and dead in trespasses and sin until we meet the Lord. And if it was not for the Lord prompting our hearts, we would still be lost. And so salvation is a gift. And if we have received it, it's because of God's grace and mercy, not because we are somehow better than somebody else. And since God owned the land, that made the people that were given that land really tenants. And that's really what we are. We might have a deed to a house, but we're just tenants because one day we're going to be gone. Our real home is in heaven, and one day we're going to be there, and that'll be forever. And kind of in between, of course, we'll come and we'll be a part of the millennium. We'll come back with Christ. He'll set up his kingdom. We'll rule and reign with him. And what place we have in his kingdom is determined by what we do here on this earth as his children. But we will be with him from that day forward. Well, let me back up. If we, of course, die to be absent from the bodies, to be present with the Lord. And if he raptures the church, we will, of course, be immediately with him if we're born again. Hosea 5, verse 10. I want to read that verse because I don't remember what it is. I've got that next to the statement I just made. Hosea comes right after Daniel. Verse number 10. The princes of Judah were like them that remove the bound. Therefore will I pour out my wrath upon them like water. So moving the boundaries, since they were God's, would be God's tenants, meant stealing from God, and he would punish them. And then on Mount Ebal, or from Mount Ebal, this crime was one, and we'll see that when we get to Deuteronomy 27, verse number 17. Cursed be he that removeth his neighbor's landmark, and all the people shall say, Amen. So this crime will be included among the curses announced from Mount Ebal. I heard yesterday there's a preacher, Baptist preacher, down in Louisiana. Did you hear about that Baptist preacher down in Louisiana? Large church, so large that they started a mission church from that church. So there's two churches. And then there's a ministry involved too. I forget what the ministry was, some kind of extra church ministry. And he was found to have stolen, embezzled, $900,000. Now, my question would be, if the preacher had any sense, why would any preacher put himself in a position to be accused of something like that if he never touched the money? Really, I mean, why would any minister? Now, when you're first starting a church, it might be different. But once a church is established and you have people to handle the money, why would any pastor put himself in that position to handle the money? And I've seen a couple. I have another. I told you about one preacher. He ended up losing the church overhead. That thing was moving and shaking. I'm not kidding you. It was a wonderful church. And he was handling the money. And I had a meeting with him, and I warned him. I said, man, you don't want to do that. You don't want to handle the money. He was doing it all. He was having it collected. He would take it all. He'd deposit it. He'd write the checks. I mean, the whole nine yards, everything. And he ended up, sure enough, the old tempter got a hold of him, and he ended up losing his church. And now he's out of the ministry. Very gifted preacher. Very gifted, good speaker. And I have another friend. Now, he hasn't been accused of anything, nor has he lost his church over it, but I don't think he does it anymore, thankfully. But he used to write checks and stuff. I just don't get it. I don't get it. I just don't understand. No one can ever accuse me of that because I never, ever, ever touch. Not even touch. Nor do I look at what people give, because then I'd be a respecter of persons. I would say, oh yeah, brother so-and-so, yeah, he gives a lot of money. Hey, brother so-and-so, pal, you know, that kind of thing. I know you're tired of hearing it, but I'm big on that. I mean, that's one of my biggie things. Don't want any issues with that. While the punisher of the murderer reminded them that life is precious, the punishment of the thief reminded them that personal property must be respected. After all, there is a commandment, I forget if it's 6 or 7, thou shalt not steal, Exodus 20, verse 15, and it also includes extortion. Extortion, Psalm 62. Verse number 10, Psalm 62, verse 10, trust not in oppression, become not vain in robbery. If riches increase, set not your heart upon them. Because extortion is also stealing, and God condemns officials who make unjust laws so they can rob the poor and the helpless. Ezekiel 22, I might as well read that since I've been reading all the other ones. Ezekiel 22. And verse number 29, Ezekiel 22 and verse number 29. The people of the land have used oppression and exercised robbery and have vexed the poor and the needy. Yea, they have oppressed the stranger wrongfully. Slanderers and false witnesses rob people of their good name. And if a good name, like for instance, identity theft, that's a big thing today, right? Identity theft. If somebody steals your identity and starts taking out loans and all that stuff, it takes an act of Congress almost in order to get things straightened out. You've heard advertisement, LifeLock, and all these different things to protect your identity. And when you lose your good name, man, it's hard to get it back. Like being accused of a crime you didn't commit, right? Man, you're accused of certain crimes, and even though you're as innocent as as pure as the windblown, fresh fallen snow, doesn't matter. You're accused of something. Your name can be destroyed. It's hard to get it back. In verses 16 through 19 here in Deuteronomy 19, if I could have a volunteer to read those. 16 through 19. Anybody? Going once? Going twice? Okay, back on.
If a false witness rise up against any man to testify against him that which is wrong, then both the men between whom the controversy is shall stand before the Lord, before the priests and the judges which shall be in those days. And the judges shall make diligent inquisition. And behold, if the witness be a false witness and hath testified falsely against his brother, then shall ye do unto him as he had thought to have done unto his brother, so shalt thou put the evil away from among you.
All right, thank you. I didn't read verse 15. One witness shall not rise up against a man for any crime or for any sin, and in any sin that he sinneth at the mouth of two witnesses or at the mouth of three witnesses shall the matter be established. And that goes along with what Becca read, by the way. And by the way, I didn't mention that a good reputation is more difficult to restore than the stolen stuff. If stuff is stolen, I mean, that can be found and replaced a whole lot easier than a name that has been slandered. Write down, if you would, next to that, Matthew 15, 19 through 20. Matthew 15, 19 through 20, you can look at that. All right, this leads us to number 5, the liar. And this will finish the chapter, the liar. 15 through 21. A system of justice only works if people know the truth and tell the truth. One of the biggest complaints against our nation today, the leadership, is the absolute, I mean, they are laser focused on keeping people from hearing the truth. People are being canceled. People on Facebook and Twitter, YouTube, if they dare to speak against what is commonly accepted as truth in the far left Marxist realm, both in media, government, whatever. For instance, before the last election, the Hunter Biden laptop thing came out. It was proven absolutely true. Hunter himself's the one that dropped off more than one laptop at a repair place. He signed for it. I mean, the receipt was there. Everybody knew that it was right, and the media, along with the government and along with social media, covered it up. It has been demonstrated beyond a shadow of a doubt that had that story come out when it should have before the election, Biden couldn't have even have cheated his way in. Because many of the independents who voted for him said, no, we would not have voted for him if we would have known this. So justice can only work, and it's not working now. When you have the FBI with guns drawn, the whole nine yards, SWAT team coming and storming a home of a man that was present at a pro-life rally, and yet you have people that burned down cities, portions of cities, and killed police, and people died, and businesses were destroyed, and not a single arrest. Does that sound like justice? It's happening all over the country. It's been going on for a good while now. And that's why November the 8th is so important. Make sure you vote. Vote intelligently, but vote. And take 10 or 20 with you The only way that we can get beyond the cheating is they have to be overwhelmed with votes. Seriously. So if our system of justice is ever going to work again, the people have to know the truth. But we also have to tell the truth. Thou shalt not bear false witness. Sound familiar? Basically, thou shalt not lie. That's another commandment. Breaking this commandment undermines the foundation of the entire legal system. And I'm going to say it, I probably shouldn't, but I'm going to anyway. The man in the White House is probably the biggest liar that I've ever heard in public office. I'm serious. Every time he opens his mouth, a lie comes out. It's tragic. I mean, it breaks my heart because we're better than that. To swear to tell the truth. You go into court and you raise your hand, you swear to tell the truth, and you lie. What's that called when you go to court and you lie?
Perjury.
Yeah, you commit perjury. That in itself, of course, is a crime. It's a serious crime. Well, Jewish law required two or three witnesses. When a charge was brought against someone, accusation against someone, the Jewish law required the two or three witnesses to establish the guilt of the accused. Back in Deuteronomy 17, verse number 6, at the mouth of two witnesses or three witnesses shall he that is worthy of death be put to death, but at the mouth of one witness he shall not be put to death, because they didn't want the accusation to be based on hearsay and someone lose their lives over hearsay when the crime was not established to be true. In Numbers chapter 35 and verse number 30, whoso killeth any person, the murderer shall be put to death by the mouth of witnesses. But one witness shall not testify against any person to cause him to die. The Lord Jesus himself and the Apostle Paul applied this principle to church discipline. Jesus in Matthew 18, 16, and Paul in 2 Corinthians 13, 1, and 1 Timothy 5, verse 19. Now, is there any guarantee that two or three witnesses are telling the truth? I mean, they could get together and say, hey, I mean, they did it to Christ, didn't they? Hey, how about if we get together and we tell a lie on this guy over here and we'll get rid of that scoundrel? I don't like him. Well, 1 Kings chapter 21, you'll recognize this story. Remember Naboth, the Jezreelite who had the vineyard that was in Jezreel, and it was right next door to the palace of Ahab, king of Samaria. Remember that? And he wanted it bad. Oh, yeah, he wanted it. And Ahab spake unto Naboth, saying, give me thy vineyard that I may have it for a garden of herbs, because it is near unto my house, and I will give thee for it a better vineyard than it, or if it seem good to thee, I will give thee the worth of it in money. And Naboth said to Ahab, the Lord forbid it me that I should give the inheritance of my fathers unto thee. And Ahab came into his house heavy and displeased because of the word which Naboth the Jezreelite had spoken him, for he had said, I will not give thee the inheritance of my fathers. And he laid down him upon his bed and turned away his face and would eat no bread. He was having a pity party. He was pouting. Because he couldn't get a piece of land. Really? Come on, King. Grow up. Man. But thankfully he had evil Jezebel as his wife. He came to him and said unto him, why is thy spirit so sad that thou eatest no bread? And he said unto her, because I spake unto Naboth the Jezreelite and said unto him, give me thy vineyard for money or else, if it please thee, I will give thee another vineyard for it. And he answered, I will not give thee my vineyard. And Jezebel's wife said to him, dost thou not now govern the kingdom of Israel? Arise and eat bread and let thine heart be merry. I will give thee the vineyard of Naboth the Jezreelite. So she wrote letters in Ahab's name and sealed them with his seal and sent the letters unto the elders and to the nobles that were in his city dwelling with Naboth. And she wrote in the letters saying, proclaim a fast and set Naboth on high among the people, and set two men, sons of Belial, before him to bear witness against him, saying, thou didst blaspheme God and the king, and then carry him out and stone him that he may die. And the men of his city, even the elders and the nobles who were inhabitants in his city, did as Jezebel had said unto them, as it was written in the letters that she had sent unto him. They proclaimed a fast, set Naboth on high among the people. And there came in two men, children of Belial, and sat before him. And the men of Belial witnessed against him, even against Naboth, in the presence of the people, saying, Naboth did blaspheme God and the king. And they carried him forth out of the city and stoned him with stones that he died. And they sent word to Jezebel, saying, Naboth is stoned and is dead. What a wonderful lady. Huh? Yeah, and licked the blood and everything. Was, yeah, I'm surprised the dogs would even eat her. But they did. So two or three could very well tell a big fib. And notice what they were called, sons of Belial. Well, who's the son of Belial? The son of Satan, right? So since Satan is the father of all lies, then if someone is a chronic liar, they are a child of Satan himself. So there could be, and also, by the way, and Moses warned that the false witness would be punished with the same punishment that they wanted inflicted upon the accused. Now, there could be times when only one witness would accuse a person and be a false witness. Well, they would go before the priests and the judges at the central court at the sanctuary and present their case. That was described back also in chapter 17, verses 8 through 13. If the witness was found to be lying, he would receive again the same sentence that would have been given to the accused if the accused had been found guilty. And of course, this would be another deterrent. Liars would think twice before lying. And again, we have many in our society that think it's wrong, because after all, remember Jesus in the Sermon on the Mount, he said, no more eye for an eye and tooth for a tooth. But let me ask you a question. Did Jesus come to abolish the law or to fulfill it? Jesus was talking about individuals exacting vengeance upon other individuals. He was not talking about the government meting out justice. It's a big difference. He's talking to individuals. You don't have a right to, and he wasn't the only one. Paul talked about vengeance. Vengeance belongs to the Lord. He said, vengeance is mine, I will repay. So we're not to take personal vengeance on someone and get even, and get back at someone. You know, payback. That's human nature, right? Well, I'll show him. I'll get him. Oh, yeah.
I don't get mad, I get even.
Yeah, there you go. That's a good saying. Yeah. And that's what the Lord was talking about. He was not talking about governments not being able to mete out justice. It is still biblically true and accurate that if someone murders someone intentionally, they are to be put to death. And if they are not put to death, you see the results in our society of what happens. And now we have these woke prosecutors put in there by Soros' money, and they refuse to give people the punishment they deserve for crimes committed. And so crime, what happened to crime? Gone way down, hadn't it? Huh? Well, according to Biden, it has. And if he doesn't agree that it has, he blames the Republicans. Because now, I don't know if you notice, he's all for law and order. He's for police now.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, my. Yeah. Definitely. The far left Marxist radical freako nuts are definitely pro-police. There's no question. Definitely. Liars would think twice. The Lord would reveal the truth, by the way, to priests and judges. So if someone accused someone, one person would accuse somebody of a crime, and they'd go to this court in the sanctuary, well, God, of course, would reveal the truth to the priests and the judges, and the truth would come out, and that person would receive the punishment that the person accused would have received. And so you would think if someone was sane, they would see that and say, maybe I shouldn't come forward with lies. Just like we talked about the murder. Maybe I shouldn't just be killing people. Maybe I might end up dead myself. In Proverbs 19, and we're getting ready to wrap it up here. I think we've covered it. In Proverbs 19, verse number 5, Proverbs 19, 5, a false witness shall not be unpunished, and he that speaketh lies shall not escape. And then same chapter, verse number 9, a false witness shall not be unpunished, and he that speaketh lies shall perish. So that pretty much sums it up. So Moses closes this section then by reminding the people that in every case, the punishment must fit the crime. You can write down Exodus 21, 23 through 25. Exodus 21, 23 through 25. But if you look at the very last verse, there shall, and thine eyes shall not pity, but life shall go for life, eye for eye, tooth for tooth, hand for hand, foot for foot. And this is the principle of legal justice, the law of retaliation. We're talking about a fair sentence, not vengeance. A fair sentence. Personal vengeance, of course, the Lord accused the Pharisees of, Matthew 5, 38 through 42. Again, that's talking about individuals, not governments, meting out justice that is appropriate. But punishments must fit the crime. In this period of time in history, punishments were brutal. I mean, just brutal. God said, no, they need to be fair, and they need to be humane, but they need to be right. They need to be exactly what should be done to someone who commits a certain crime. God made it very clear. All right, questions or comments? Anybody? Yes, sir, Fred.
You have mentioned earlier that the scripture in 2 Corinthians, you know, where absent from the body, be present with the Lord.
Yes, sure. When we die, our bodies, of course, either they're cremated or they go into the ground. We bury them, right? But the real us, I mean, this is just an outer shell of dust. The real us is our soul and our spirit. So the immaterial part of us goes immediately to be with the Lord. And we have a temporary tabernacle, or you could call it a temporary body. It's not a body as we think a body, because it'll be a sinless, incorrupt, immortal type of thing, but it's temporary. But when the rapture occurs, the dead in Christ rise first. So the ashes in the ground, the bone, whatever's left, comes up out of the grave. It's changed, of course, into an immortal, permanent body of some, and I say body again, it's not a flesh body, but it's real, because Christ, after he was resurrected, could eat, couldn't it? And we're going to be eating out of 12 fruits on the tree. We're going to be able to eat. So even though it's not flesh as we know flesh, there's no corruption in it. We're going to have a body. And that'll be reunited on the way up in an instant. twinkling of an eye, this mortal shall put on immortality, 1 Corinthians chapter 15. Does that make sense?
Yeah, so the absent from the body is what we refer to as the soul or the spirit.
The soul and spirit.
They go to be with the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
And the body that's buried, when Christ comes back, that whatever it is, ashes, dust, whatever it is, will rise. And that's when you be given a new structure.
A permanent. Yeah, permanent. Mm. A immortal body, one that will never die again. It's so the one that's in the ground, of course, as it's raised, of course, it's going to be totally changed, made new. It's kind of exciting because when our hearts stop and we die, we don't cease to function. We don't go into a state of soul sleep like some teach. You know, I think Seventh-day Adventists teach that. I know that Jehovah's Witnesses do. I don't know about Mormons. I think Mormons do too.
I've heard some Methodists. That's why I mentioned that. I've heard some Methodists recently teach that that this. I don't know. I don't have my original King James. I have the New King James,
mm-hmm.
and it says sleep. And I've heard a lot of people say, refer to when you die, you go down, you sleep in the
yeah.
ground.
Well, the word sleep is used in several places, and that's simply a wonderful way of describing what happens to a Christian. They don't say that about lost people. Okay? Sleep, when you think of sleep, you think of rest. And our rest is in the Lord. But you can't deny or explain away to be absent from the body is to be present with the Lord. It's not, because obviously if your body's in the ground, it's not, if you want to count the body as asleep, I guess you could. But the real us is not the dust we're made of, it's the soul and the spirit, the immaterial part that's the reality. Yes?
Well, one of the references that the Lord made is when that little girl had died. And when he came there on all the mourners, he said, she's not dead, she's just sleeping.
There you go. That's a good...
Her spirit was wherever it was, but her body was asleep, and that's what...
Yeah.
It's referring to the body going...
And it's a very gentle way of describing the death of a saint. Yeah. All right, prayer list.